This show is not intended for the politically correct or the close-minded. Enter at the risk of opening your eyes. You have been warned.
Why does the media attack an issue? To get primetime ratings?
In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in.
The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
A moment comes when we step out from the old to the new, and when the soul of a nation, long suppressed, finds utterance.
Kind of catapult the propaganda.
You are listening to Open Eyes with your host, Ira Robinson. From the normal to the paranormal, from government cover-ups to the depths of our consciousness, we aim to explore all things. From the dawn of prehistory to current events, no topic is forbidden and nothing remains hidden.
No more secrets.
Open your eyes and open your mind to the fact that life as we know it is not as we have been taught. Join us at latenightinthemidlands.com or openeyesnetwork.com as we take this brief journey through the depths of the cosmos and explore what it really means to be human.
Many peoples have sacrificed their liberties only to learn to their sorrow that deceit and mockery, poverty and tyranny are their reward.
Whether you're online or offline, intercontinental or intergalactic, hello and welcome to Open Eyes. Today is, let's see, Monday, March 16th. Boy, I'm almost thrown off here at the beginning already. Monday, March 16th, 2015. And I wanted to welcome you guys to another hopefully exciting week here on Open Eyes. This week, I have some very interesting topics for you guys, at least at this point in time. Of course, things can change if new information comes out that I really have to talk about or whatever. But today, I want to talk to you guys about the idea that people are doomed through charity. And that may sound a little bit weird, but bear with me while I explain it. I'll get to it after the first break, after my news segment here. And hopefully you guys will come to an understanding of what I'm meaning by it. And maybe be able to walk through life a little bit better informed and a little bit more equipped once you know kind of the truths that have been hidden from us as far as this kind of stuff is concerned. So, let's see here. Boy, I had a real busy weekend news-wise. There were a few things that I ran across that I really had to bring to you guys, and I don't know if you guys have heard about these yet or not. I found them to be very disturbing, especially this first one. Let me read the article for you here. While the Ontario Liberal government under Premier Kathleen Wynne would have parents believe that its newly unveiled sex ed program is an unbiased presentation of facts, a detailed look at what kids in grades 1 through 8 are expected to learn reveals something entirely different. Passing the baton of the 1960s second sexual I'll start that sentence over. Passing the baton of the 1960s sexual revolt to today's up-and-coming generations of youngsters, the 2015 Health and Physical Education Program states in its earliest pages that sexual health is more than simply teaching young people about the anatomy and physiology of reproduction, but includes the relatively recent inventions of sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression, as well as gender roles and expectations. Now, the article I'll have linked up on my website, of course. The article comes to things from a very, I guess you could say, right-wing sort of leaning, but you can definitely glean from it the disturbing things that are going on in this particular sexual education program there in Ontario. Now, this actually is not even as drastic. This is not actually even as drastic as the one that I brought you guys. Let's see. It was about 2 months ago at this point, talking about in Oregon, the sex ed program that happened there last year and the really disturbing events that occurred there. But this one that's happening in Ontario is sort of a toned down version of it. And it still contains some very disturbing things. So you guys in Canada, you have to deal with this stuff apparently as well. And it may very well be coming to a school near you if you're here in America. So some of the things that are in this educational indoctrination program that I ran across are one quote. I believe this was from about page 150 or so of the program, which, by the way, in the article that is linked, you can download a PDF of the entirety of this program. It's about 250 pages long, and it is just full of things like this. Seventh graders are being told, one of the best things that you can do to fight HIV and AIDS is to stop the stigma that is associated with having the infection. Now, I will grant that having that stigma is not a good thing. The fact that there is such a stigma that's attached to the HIV and AIDS infection is not a good thing. I mean, it's there mostly because a lot of people think that you'd only get HIV from drug use and from gay sex and on and on and on. But the fact is that there are many ways that people can get that disease, and it's not specific to those instances. Yes, it is prevalent there, but that's not the end all and be all. And people really have got to stop doing that, because it does the rest of everything a disservice when you don't pay attention to the actual scientific facts that are surrounding it and the statistics that are surrounding it. So again, yes, getting rid of that stigma is important. However, how is this a science-based sort of approach when you say, okay, getting preventing this infection starts with removing the stigma that surrounds the infection? Where is the science there? How does just, I guess you could say, ignoring that it's a bad thing actually help you not get the bad thing? There's no scientific basis to this. And this is just one aspect of this sex ed program that I look at as being a very dangerous sort of thing. You're teaching children that just by not having negative thoughts about the thing, you're somehow going to avoid ever becoming infected with it. It makes no sense. Again, there's for a program that is allegedly trying to come at things from a scientific standpoint, which is what they claim they are trying to do, it sort of does the opposite of that. Now, one of the things that I ran across for eighth graders was this quote from the pages of this program. How would thinking about your personal limits and making a personal plan influence decisions that you make about your sexual activity? Again, okay, you take the idea that in that particular district of Canada, and I don't know if it's this way throughout all of Canada, but eighth graders are, what, 12, 13 years old, basically, on average. And in Canada, it is actually illegal for anyone under 14 or so years of age to actually have sex. So you're kind of indoctrinating children into thinking, well, I'm going to have relations. How am I going to incorporate my sex relations into my overall life plan? And when did 14 or 12 and 13 year olds get life plans anyways? Again, I'm going to have a link for all of this on my website for you guys that you can go to and take a look at some of this stuff. It really is just absolutely crazy. Now, one of the other things that is tied with this, and I think actually the most important aspect, and it's the reason why I wanted to bring it up to you guys, is this. Tied to this information is another article that I ran across. I'll read this one to you as well. Ontario Premier Kathleen Wynne's former Deputy Minister of Education, Benjamin Levin, was convicted March 3rd in a Toronto courtroom to three charges involving child pornography, making written child pornography, counseling a person to commit a sexual assault, and possession of child pornography. After Justice Heather Adair MacArthur of the Ontario Court of Justice accepted Levin's guilty plea to the three charges, Crown Counsel Allison Dellandrea said neither the Crown nor Levin's lawyer, Clayton Ruby, disputed the agreed statement of fact. In other words, pleading guilty. Among the more lurid details contained in the statement are the admission that Levin, in internet chats, claimed that he had sexually abused his own daughters, hoped his daughters would make his grandchildren available to him for sex, and counseled an undercover officer on how to groom a child for sexual abuse. The statement acknowledges that there is no evidence that Levin actually abused his children and that he has not been charged for that offense. Now, the reason why I bring that subject up and why I bring that story up to you guys in relation to this sexual education program in Ontario is that Benjamin Levin wrote the sexual education program that I'm discussing here. He is the author and the architect of this sex ed program, and he's now a convicted pedophile. So you guys up there in Canada now have to be forced to have your children go through a sex ed program that was written by a convicted pedophile. And if you guys aren't out in the streets screaming and hollering about this, there is something wrong with you. That is absolutely disgusting. There is something wrong with this picture, and people need to start taking action. This is not right, guys. And again, this same thing is occurring here in America. Don't think that it's just in Canada, guys. The same thing is happening here in America. The sex ed programs that are put on here in the United States, a lot of them are exactly like this one and worse, where they're showing pornography to children. They're leading the children to websites and showing them how to log on to a porn website, how to have chats with their friends and with other people sexually, how to video sex, and that taking methamphetamine actually increases your sex drive and that it's a good thing, and on and on and on and on. And this is just abjectly disgusting. So again, don't think that it's not here in America. It is. And if it's not in your school or in your children's schools right now, it's soon going to be. This is grooming. This is a great way to groom children into the new realms of sex that they want people to fall under. Essentially how I stated here in the article earlier, the 1960s sexual revolution had nothing on what's going on now with our children. And we have to be very careful. We have to be very cautious, and we have to be very vigilant when it comes to how our children are being taught in schools. It's not just in regards to the sex ed, of course, it's with everything. But with this sex ed stuff, it is really damaging, and it is really dangerous, because this is the future. Okay, now again, and if you've listened to any of my episodes before where I've talked about the sex ed programs that are going on, you'll understand my viewpoints on things is that sex ed is critical. It is very important. It's something that does not need to be ignored, and it should be taught really early in life. There's no reason why children should not know the body parts and all of that kind of stuff, you know, be able to know the names of them and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's no different than this is my hand, this is my arm, this is my nose, this is my penis, or this is my vagina, or whatever. Okay, there's nothing wrong with that, and people need to get away from that puritanical kind of mindset. Okay, but there's a big difference between just learning about what the parts are, and maybe as they get older and start to flourish puberty wise and all of that kind of stuff. At that point, then you can maybe go into a little bit more detail about what everything is and all that kind of jazz. However, there is no reason to actually groom them into this new realm and do everything that you can do to essentially force into their minds that they need to go out and have sex. And that's what these sex education programs now seem to be leading everybody into, is the thought that, well, be free with your sexuality, because there's, you know, get it while the getting is good, basically, is what it comes down to. So, and that is dangerous. I mean, it's dangerous because there are so many different predators that are out there. And I'm not talking about just, you know, Johnny down the road or Uncle Joe Biden or whatever. Okay, I'm talking about well, I suppose Biden would fit into this category, but I'm talking about there are actual groups that are out there that are targeting children, and they're targeting children for sale. They're targeting children for use, for ritualistic abuse, on and on and on. And it's out there, and you guys really need to start really paying attention to this stuff. And I know the topic is hard to hear about, and I know people get offended when people speak about these things, but stop being offended by it and start protecting your children. That's what it comes down to. Stop being offended by what people say is going on and start being actually pissed off or do what you can to protect your children from this stuff. Sticking your head in the sand is not going to help. It's just going to make things worse. Okay. That's what it comes down to. So I wanted to make sure to give you guys the information that are out there, because I know I have a lot of listeners that are in Canada, and I know that a lot of people here don't really realize what's going on in the programs that are going on in your children's schools. And this is a dangerous time period that we're in right now. It really is, guys. This is dangerous territory. And I know it's scary, but it scares me and it bothers me, but what can you do? Ignoring it doesn't do any good. So I guess, speaking of offending people, it ties into this next article that I have to bring you guys. There's a reason we shouldn't be talking about religion and politics in polite company. It stirs passions and strong emotions. For one Michigan woman whose emotions and a slow cooker ended the argument with the murder of her best friend. A Detroit woman was ordered Thursday to stand trial in the killing of her friend, beaten with a slow cooker after the two argued about politics. Tawana Sullivan, aged 50, who is charged with murder, cried after her preliminary hearing, as she heard graphic details about the fatal October 22nd assault on Cheryl Livey, age 66, with a kitchen appliance. Oakland County Medical Examiner Dr. Lubiza Dragovic testified before Livonia District Judge Sean Kavanaugh that Livey died of blunt force injuries to her head, face, and mid-back. Now, it takes a special kind of somebody to beat somebody to death with a crock pot. But this is really what it... Guys, this is why I do everything that I can do to at least try to soften some of the blows with stuff, with some of the topics that are talked about with this. And I hate to do it, but people just get so offended by the smallest things. And for example, with this, I guess they were talking about, they were arguing over Obama's politics and all of this kind of stuff. And these were friends that had been friends for years, and they got so offended at each other that they argued about things, and the woman beat her to death with a crock pot, okay, with a slow cooker. This is insanity. And okay, I know I talk a lot about politics on my show, but I hope that it never comes down to the thought that you guys are going to come at me with some kind of cookware, okay? I mean, this is insanity, and this is just a great example of how people need to stop being offended and actually start having discussions with people, having debates with people. Yes, and you may disagree with people, but you can at least walk away from each other, at least friends. And if you can't, at least walk away from each other before the politics gets to the point where you're so offended by them that you have to resort to violence to defend your position. I mean, political things are an idea. Religion is an idea. Topics in school, it's an idea, okay? So you can't beat those things violently. Yes, you can shut the person up, but that doesn't change the idea that's there. That doesn't change the ideas that the person was talking about that made you react in that way. So when it comes to dealing with other people, guys, basically do what you can do to talk to people. Try to get them to wake up. Try to get them to open their eyes to things that are going on. But don't ever resort to violence to get your point across. It doesn't do any good. That's what a weird, weird situation. What a weird way to go, you know? Imagine going to the pearly gates. How did you get here? Well, crock pot, you know? I mean, people are weird. And this may be actually a reason why. Anyways, humans contain alien genes not passed on from our ancestors, researchers have discovered. They say that we acquired essential foreign genes from microorganisms cohabitating their environment in ancient times. The study challenges conventional views that animal evolution relies solely on genes passed down through ancestral lines and says the process could still be going on. The research published in the open access journal Genome Biology focuses on the use of horizontal gene transfer, the transfer of genes between organisms living in the same environment. A quote from lead author Alistair Crisp from the University of Cambridge said, "This is the first study to show how widely horizontal gene transfer, or HGT, occurs in animals, including humans, giving rise to tens of hundreds of active foreign genes. Surprisingly, far from being a rare occurrence, it appears that HGT has contributed to the evolution of many and perhaps all animals, and that the process is ongoing, meaning that we may need to reevaluate how we think about evolution." Now, I've been saying for a really long time about bacteria inserting genes into organisms' DNA in order for that organism to create proteins based on the bacteria, you know, like basically as food for the bacteria. So what I've seen is that they're using the same methods to make genetically modified organisms, where they're taking bacteria basically and using it as a means to inject a new type of DNA into an animal or a plant or whatever it is that they're manipulating, and cause that that thing's genome to change. So my question would be, what is the increase in transfers by bacteria in the presence of these GMOs, right? I mean, what I've heard is that you could almost think of bacteria as being sort of the evolutionary toolkit of God, that bacteria are what causes the different things to change within us and to, basically cause things to occur. So, one example that I give is how, you know, us as a human being, we're actually only about 10% of actual human being. The other 90% is different bacteria and viruses and that sort of things that we're carrying around inside of us in these gigantic colonies, essentially. And maybe some of the cravings that we have for foods or for drinks or certain nutrients or vitamins or whatever are actually due to these bacteria becoming addicted to these things, and they are cueing us to give them this material for them to fulfill their cravings. So if you're addicted to Twinkies or Ho-Hos or something like that, there may be a chemical that's contained within those Twinkies or Ho-Hos that the bacteria within your gut are addicted to, and they will make you basically crave these things so that they can have their addictions fed. It's an interesting topic. It's an interesting thing to think about, how much of what we decide to do is actually us deciding to do it, and how much of it is due to what we're actually carrying around inside of us that is not actually us. It's not our consciousness. It's another kind of consciousness that is essentially co-opting ours and forcing us to do whatever it is that they're bidding us to do. It's sort of a strange concept, and it's actually kind of a worrisome concept if you really think about it. But who knows? I'm going to talk about this topic actually again at some point here real soon, because I think that it's one that's important. It's one that we need to come to an understanding of, a deeper understanding of, because if we can understand why we do things the way that we do them, then we can more easily control ourselves and our actions from that point forward. So, like I said, I find the topic really interesting. I think that it's something that everybody should at least pay some attention to have a better understanding of how things go. So with that, I am going to go ahead and take a break here. When we come back, I'm going to get into the idea of charity. I'm going to get into the idea of how karma is tied to charity. And essentially, it's going to kind of be a karma-centric episode. So stick around with us. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Ben Franklin said, "If you do the same thing tomorrow as you did today, you're going to get the same tomorrow as you got today." Changing the world starts with you, and changing you starts with changing the way you think. Late Night in the Midlands can help. Listen to all of our shows at latenightinthemidlands.com, because things really do need to change.
The L&M Radio Network and Late Night in the Midlands depends on you, the listener. Without you, there would be no us. So help us continue to bring you the best guests with the best information, and subscribe today. Information on becoming an L&M subscriber can be found at the top of latenightinthemidlands.com. Just click the About Subscriptions tab and become part of the family while helping the truth stay alive. And while you're at it, maybe subscriptions aren't for you. A one-time donation helps as well. Click that donate button on the right side of latenightinthemidlands.com and help us help you.
Open Eyes seeks out the heart of matters, looking for explanations in places that most other radio hosts refuse to go. No subject is forbidden, and nothing remains hidden. Listen to Open Eyes on the Late Night in the Midlands Radio Network, weekdays from 7 to 9 p.m. Open minds, open hearts, open eyes.
Oh. we're not exactly sure with this fuzzy line between consciousness and unconsciousness. I'm thinking that this whole thing might be someone's imagination. It might be your imagination. It might be.
What is real? How do you define real?
It is a deeper question altogether, which is, what do you desire? What makes you itch? What sort of a situation would you like?
What you call the external world is as much you as your own body. Your skin doesn't separate you from the world. It's a bridge through which the external world flows into you. And you flow into it.
The universe is in us.
What is your motive for action? What is it that drives you in your life today, not 10 years ago, or are you running the same pattern?
He said, when you want to succeed as bad as you want to breathe, then you'll be successful.
But in the end, the most important thing is, what's the purpose of your life? Why are you here?
What it makes of us as people, who we become. Ultimately, though, we have to have a sense that who we even have become has some kind of meaning.
That was Epic Adventure by Akashic Records. I really like that song. My wife Jolene always says, though, that it reminds her of the movie The Neverending Story and the scene where Falcor is flying through the air with Sebastian on his back. And when she told me about that, it definitely reminded me of it. Yeah, every time I hear that song, all I can think of is the kid on the back of the dragon going, yeah! Anyways, I love that song. Hello again. My name is Ira, and you are listening to Open Eyes. Thank you for sticking around through that break. I definitely appreciate it. I hope that you guys are comfortable. I hope that you guys have your coffee, your tea, your pop, whatever it may be, and that you are ready to listen to some karmic information. This is a topic that I really love to talk about. It's one that I have a real deep belief in. And of course, I mean, all of the information that I'm going to give out with this is my belief and nothing more than that. It's what I've come to understand about life, the universe, and everything. And some people may think differently than me, and that's fine. I'm not advocating that this is the absolute end-all and be-all truth, but this is what I have found to be the truth. And if you agree with it, then cool. And if not, well, you know, go with whatever it is that you have an understanding of, and we don't have to have an argument over it, basically. But this is what I have learned over the years. This is the information that's been revealed to me. And so it's something that I'm passionate to talk about because for me, I see a lot of people, I guess, being under a state of harm because of actions that they're taking or because of things that they're doing and not really having an understanding that it does affect people in a really bad way. So first off, let me give you my viewpoints as far as karma is concerned, because my viewpoint on it or my take on it is a little bit different than what I guess you could say most people think of. For me, karma is you could look at it as being essentially an accumulation of either negative or positive energy onto yourself, onto your soul, so to speak. Although I use that term kind of loosely as well, because there are many different aspects of us as far as our souls are concerned. As far as souls go, we essentially are tied to all of the other versions of ourselves. If you go back into my archives a little bit, you'll hear me talking about my idea as far as reality is concerned. And in a little brief overview, I guess, nutshelling it a little bit, I can tell you that the idea of reality that I look at things with is that we essentially are in kind of this multiple dimensional universe that there, you know, you have for every decision that you make, a different universe basically is created, or a different dimension is created, a different version of things is created. And life basically goes on from there based upon all of the different decisions that are made. So you come to a crossroads, you can decide that you want to have mint chocolate ice cream instead of vanilla ice cream. And in one universe, you had mint chocolate ice cream. And in the other universe, you had vanilla ice cream. And everything basically plays out from there. The universe for, I guess, space-saving ways or reasons will essentially crash the different universes together that are very closely tied together and have just subtle differences between them. So if, for example, in one universe, let's see, Caesar decides to have mint chocolate ice cream instead of vanilla ice cream, then, and that would be the only difference in that universe from any other universe, it would basically be kind of crashed into or compressed into another dimension, basically, so that, again, space can be saved on the universal hard drive, so to speak. And again, if you want to go to my archives, you'll hear a much more detailed explanation of those things. This is just really quick nutshelling version of it, because I could go on about that little topic alone for a couple of hours. But again, suffice it to say that as far as our souls are concerned, we have the different versions of ourselves are kind of controlled or watched over by an oversoul, I guess you could say. And I hate to use that term because a lot of people, again, have sort of their own associations with that, but it's kind of the best fit. There's a soul that is in control of or watching over all of the different versions of yourself. And that is the soul. That is the main soul. That is the oversoul, again, for lack of better words. And then all of these other little versions of yourself are basically little shards of this soul. They're little versions of that soul. So with karma, essentially, the karma is an accumulation of positive or negative energy that becomes associated with that particular version of your soul, that particular shard, I guess you could say. Sort of like taking a diamond and destroying it and breaking it into multiple little pieces. Each one of those multiple little pieces is the individual souls that are within these different dimensions, basically. But the oversoul is the full version, the full diamond version of everything, essentially. So does that make sense to you guys? I hope so. Again, you can go back into my archives and listen to a deeper version of it and come to an understanding with it, I think. But anyways, so for me, I look at karma basically as being kind of for this one time period, and that's it. But it does have an impact on everything that happens to you in your life based upon the different things that you do. It's about conscience and interaction. So if you do something essentially that you know is against your conscience, if it's against your better judgment, if it's against your knowledge of what is right and wrong, then that is a negative karma that's built up. That's a negative energy that's built up. If you do something that is of a positive nature, then that is, again, going to generate a positive aspect of energy onto you. And it's that way as far as interacting with people and things are concerned as well. So if, for instance, you do something, you are helping somebody out for an example, if you're tied with somebody else, then what they do as well impacts your own karma, at least maybe not, if not in major ways, it will in subtle ways. So just by association, it's that guilt by association sort of thing. If you're surrounding yourself by people that are negative, then that negative charge gets passed to you as well. The important aspect with all of this to remember is that as people, we're not actually what you see. We're not actually these physical bodies. This is just a perception, a physical representation of what we actually really are, which is energy. So just like how different aspects of energy can take on either positive or negative charges and that sort of thing, the different molecules, different atoms, on and on and on, they can all take on these different things and be changed from there. The same happens with us as well. If we do things that are, again, of a more negative bent, then we accumulate that negative charge. If we do things of a positive bent, then we accumulate a positive charge. And the idea with karma is basically that you want to remain as balanced between the two as you possibly can. If you go into more of a positive karma, for instance, and most people would say, well, that's a good thing, right? You want to be as positive as you can be. The issue with it, and it's one that most people actually don't really understand, although I think some do on sort of a subconscious level, is that the more positive you are, the more negative you're going to attract to yourself. So if you're doing something that is really, really positive in nature, you are going to bring negative things into your life as a way of balancing out that positive thing. So you see a lot of, as an example, you'll see a lot of people out there that are very positive people, that are doing very positive work in the world, that are doing very, good things for the world, that are serving others more than they're serving themselves, if you want to go with that aspect of things. And those tend to be the people that have the most trouble in their lives as well. They tend to have the most sickness surrounding them, or they'll have negative people that are coming into their lives and trying to cause them harm. They'll have people that are standing against them, that are constantly talking out about them or talking bad about them or whatever it may be. But that's just an example that people who are doing things of a more positive frame of mind tend to actually accumulate the most negative things surrounding them. Now, the same can be said in the opposite direction. A lot of people who are doing negative things have positive things coming at them, or at least what people would perceive as being positive. So you'll have a celebrity who is of a negative nature, and they do negative things. As an example, I can give this Kim Kardashian. You know, she's all about the negative. She's all about serving herself and serving, you know, her own ends and justifications and all of that kind of stuff. And yet she is really popular. She has a lot of money. She has more money than she can ever know what to do with, and so forth. It's because of that negative action she's attracting the positive things. So now with this, I'm not advocating that people act negatively just so that they can get famous or get money or whatever. Please don't go that direction with this. As I said, for me, the way that I look at things is that the best way to do things is to remain as balanced between the two as you can. And that way you're not getting more of one while, you know, accumulating the other, basically. But again, it's sort of, like I said, the universe's way to maintain a balance, because it doesn't like anything being out of balance. Everything within the universe tends to be at a balance overall. There are things that aren't, of course, but over time, they will get that way. One example that I give as far as this is concerned is metronomes. You could go to YouTube, and I'll actually put a link for this YouTube video onto the show notes for this show, which, by the way, will be at openeyesnetwork.com/OE083. If you go there, you'll be able to see a video, or you can look it up yourself on YouTube. Of course, I don't beg people to come to my website, but you can go to YouTube, and there's a video that someone did where they took, I think it was 20 or 25-ish, maybe 30 metronomes, and started them swinging at different times. So they were all swinging completely out of sync. And what ends up happening, basically, and it happens this way in all of nature, that things work out this way. Over time, and in this particular video, it took about maybe 2 to 3 minutes for it to happen. But every one of the metronomes that were all originally out of synchronization together came to a synchronization with each other. So some would slow down just slightly until they caught up, the rest of them caught up. Some sped up just slightly in order for the rest to equal the rest. By the time that the video is done, all of these different metronomes that were rocking at different times all were doing exactly the same movement. They were perfectly entrained together. This happens also in shops that sell clocks and watches, for instance, the mechanical ones, not the digital ones, but the mechanical ones. And they would see that all of them, although they could be set at different times, they're all going to be timing themselves at the exact same time. So they will eventually all either catch up to or slow down for all of the rest to become perfectly imbalanced together. This is the way that the universe works at large as well. Everything is in balance and it is synchronized together over time. So you can have, yes, a rogue comet that might come through the solar system, or a rogue planet, for as an example. And that can cause problems, yes. However, over time, over a long distance worth of time, that rogue object will become entrained with the timing of the rest of the cosmos. And it's this way throughout all of the universe. It's this way in all of nature, all of everything. You know, another example, a great example for women out there, if you've lived with other women for an extended length of time, you might notice that your periods all entrain together so that you're all having them basically at the same time. And it doesn't always happen that way. Yes, there are some exceptions to the rule. You know, you get some people that are just kind of off on their periods, you know, as a general rule. But the point is that they will eventually entrain together to cycle together. And this is, again, how the universe at large works. Karma works this way as well. Okay, so for me, again, this is my take on it, but this is how I see things working. If you want to look at it as being a scientific viewpoint of how karma works, then so be it. There you go. Now, other people have ideas of karma, and one of the most prevalent, of course, is those who are of the Hindu religion. That karma is a big aspect of that religion. Now, I see them as being incorrect with things as far as their viewpoints of karma are concerned, because they've taken it to a place that it did not need to go, essentially. So what you see happening, for example, in the Hindu religion is the caste system. And that's based on actually the idea of karma and the idea of paying for karma, the karmic debt and that kind of thing. The culture there, you have this system where whatever you're born in is what you're going to remain in, and you can't really do anything to get yourself out of it, because what you were born into was to pay the karma for whatever it is that you did in your previous life. So through this process of reincarnation, each life basically is based upon what happened in the previous one. So if you're born into poverty, you must have done something wrong in your previous life to make that poverty be a part of your new existence. Now, I'm going to get into the subject of this type of thing later, but again, kind of suffice it to say that I think that they're incorrect with it, because as a matter of course, in order to maintain the balances of things, to me, I see things as being karma is paid back immediately. And you may not know, the impact or the negative thing that happened in order to pay back the negative or whatever, but I think that it does happen. And again, I'm going to get into that here in a little while. Now, the fact is that we are all interconnected together. Again, getting into the idea that as beings of energy, of these, you know, that we're just aspects, physical aspects of the energy that we are all deeply interconnected together. So whatever it is that you do to somebody else happens to you as well. And this is, again, just kind of a different explanation, I guess you could say, of karma. But you've probably heard it said that whatever you do comes back to you three times, or some other people will say whatever you do comes back to you 10 times. If you curse somebody, you're going to be cursed as well. That sort of thing. We are deeply interconnected together. The way that I look at things is that we are sort of like strings on a piano or a guitar. Let's take the piano as an example. If you pluck a string on a piano, the vibrations of that string make the sound. That's how a piano works, right? You ding, you hit the piano key, and it bounces the knocker up against the string, and it starts to vibrate. And the vibration goes forward and backwards and forward and backwards and makes the sound that you hear. Well, at the same time that that is happening, all the other keys that are surrounding it, all the other strings that are surrounding that string, start to vibrate as well. They vibrate in sympathetic harmony, basically, with this one string that was plucked. So it's the same way with us as well. If you do something to somebody else and you start them vibrating at a certain frequency or at a certain rate, or however you want to put it, any of them apply, then it's going to vibrate everything else that's around them as well. So if you do something to harm somebody else, you're going to be harmed as well in sympathy with that person's harm. And everybody that's around them is also going to feel it as well as those that are surrounding you. So it's a kind of a weird way to think of things, but it is really the truth. It is really how things work. It's like I said, it's like the piano string. And if you can think about it in those kind of terms, if you can look at human beings basically as being those piano strings, then that really is a good way to think about how we as human beings are ourselves, how our souls are basically. Now, I do think as well that there is a type of species karma that we are, again, deeply interconnected together. So what you do to impact somebody else's karma also impacts your own. And that includes us on a general basis all around. If we as human beings are doing things to destroy, certain animal species, or if we're doing, you know, the whole destroying the planet thing and all of that, because of that, because of the major event that it is, because of the major impact that it is, we ourselves as human beings, as the species in general, are impacted by that as well. We accumulate a negativity on us due to these actions that are taking place. So again, not many people think about things in those terms. They only think of karma, if you think about karma, as an individual thing, that what you do is only impacting you and your karma. And they don't really tend to think in the more extended ways that what you do impacts somebody else's karma. And so therefore what they do, because you have impacted them, now anything that they do that's in response to that or because of that, you are going to be impacted by as well. So if you do something negative to somebody else, and because of that, they do something negative then to somebody else, and they pass it along, basically, it vibrates back to you, and you are going to accumulate negative onto you because of what they did to somebody else in response to your actions. So again, this is something that people don't really think about. They don't really have a good understanding about when it comes to karma. And I know that a lot of people out there have the belief in karma, and that they try to live their lives in a positive way because they don't want to accumulate negative karma and so on and so forth. I know a lot of people out there do, but they don't really have a deep understanding about the impact or the scale at which all of this actually takes place. It's sort of a compartmentalized viewpoint of karma, and that's it. You can look at things also as there is a national type of karma too. If, for instance, you live in the United States of America and you are seeing that the leaders are going to war and they're doing things that are destroying other countries and so on and so forth. Just based on the fact that you are a citizen here in the United States and not doing anything to try to negate that from happening, you are accumulating negativity onto you based upon the actions of the nation, essentially. It's you could look at things this way. The nation is actually kind of an entity in and of itself. It is a living, breathing being that has been created out of the energy that we as citizens of the nation have output. And so it's created as a response. It's created from this type of thing. It's sort of a consensus reality type of a situation. With people focusing on the flag, for instance, that flag has become an entity. It has become a person, essentially. And no, not a thinking, breathing human being kind of person, but it is still a being. And so when people focus on that being, when they focus on it, they make it stronger. So those who are passionate about being patriotic and passionate about, oh, America is the end all and be all and all of that kind of stuff, they're putting energy out into creating this entity that is the nation, that is the country. Okay. And just like everything else, those who are within the folds or within the borders, I guess you could say, of this entity, of this country, are impacted by anything that that entity does. So again, if we go to war with somebody else, anything that happens during that war that's of a negative vein is passed on, you know, crap runs downhill kind of thing. It's passed on to those that are within the purview or the bailiwick of this nation, of this entity. So it's very important if you see, for example, your country doing something that is very negative, that you as an individual person do what you can to try to negate that negativity or try to negate those negative actions. And what does that take? Well, I don't know. Maybe going out and protesting or, you know, trying to help people out or anything along those lines, you know, whatever you can do to negate it, do something positive to counteract that negative that's going on. You know, I don't know. There are so many different possibilities that can occur. So like I said, again, there's not just the individual karma, but there's also a species karma. There's a national karma. You know, you could look at, just as another example, for as far as the United States is concerned, the things that occurred during the time period where the nation was formed were all very negative. There was a lot of negative things that happened during that time period. And I'm not just meaning, you know, with like the Civil War or the revolution and the deaths and all that kind of stuff that occurred, but just even the destruction of the Native Americans and so on and so forth after Columbus came here and on and on and on. All of that stuff is passed on to anybody who is actually a part of that nation, because that negativity, that stain, that whatever you want to call it, is a part of the national identity of this entity, that is the United States. And it's to say with, again, with any other country out there, I'm just giving the United States as an example because it's the one that I know the best. It's the one that I've lived in all of my life. So that's kind of the idea as far as the big aspects of karma are concerned. And I want to talk to you guys a little bit about the leaders. And if you listen to my interview that I did, let's see, what was it, 2 weeks ago with Maggie Hart, we talked about how our leaders are actually a mirror reflection of us in the general public. And this is sort of tied to karma in a way. It's a way for us to sort of gauge our karma as a nation, again, kind of that national entity, so to speak. It's a way for us to gauge how our karma is and maybe what we need to do to change things in our individual lives. So as an example, if our leaders are doing things to be very secretive and dark and causing problems to other people, that is, yes, their fault, absolutely. However, they're doing it in a way to make us in the public know and understand that this is something that we are doing as well. So if you, for example, are living your life and you are, I don't know, I guess hiding the truth that you're cheating on your husband with your best friends, or that you're, I don't know, stealing things and on and on and on, then you're going to see our leaders doing this as well. The people basically are creating this mirror to allow themselves to see what they're doing so that then they can change their ways and stop doing them. And then the leaders will stop doing them as well. And the more you kind of knee jerk and kick and buck out against this kind of thing, the more it actually ends up occurring, because the universe is basically trying to point out, hey, this is where the problems are. Hey, this is where the problems are. Hey, this is where the problems are. You need to listen. Okay. So, you know, kind of give you a big face smack here and say, you got to listen. I'm trying to tell you something here. Pay attention. So again, kind of the more that we fight against it, the more they will do it as a response in order to get us all to pay attention to it. And again, nobody really pays attention to these things. And what it ends up happening basically is it all turns into this sort of cancerous tumor that then leads to the destruction of the nation as an entirety, the entity, the being, this living being that's been created by the people, falls apart. The simulacra falls apart. The golem, if you want to call it that, falls to pieces. And the nation then falls to pieces. And it all has to be rebuilt again. This happened during Rome, you know, the fall of Rome. And you see all the different events that occurred there. And you could see that the people were doing the same things that their government was doing. And that because of that, this kind of cancer basically formed from the inside out and started the whole thing falling apart. And now you see this same kind of thing actually occurring here in the United States, that the nation is falling apart because people are not paying attention to what the leaders are doing and realizing that the leaders are doing it because we're doing it. And if you want to look at it from a different kind of aspect, or a little bit of a different kind of a way of putting it, you can think about things this way. What the leaders are doing, or you know, if they're doing these bad things and we're doing these bad things as well, then we have no place to say, you need to get out and change your, or, you know, you need to change your ways, or you need to get out of office or whatever, because we're doing the exact same thing. So we don't have a leg to stand on in regards to what they're doing if we're doing it too. You see? So again, that's kind of just a different way to put it, but hopefully you guys are understanding all of this and the ideas that I'm bringing forward as far as my thoughts on karma are concerned. And, I'm going to take a quick break here. When we come back, I'm going to get deeper into then the idea of being charitable actually kind of dooming us in the end, and some of my thoughts in regards to all of that stuff. And we'll get more into the deeper aspects of karma. And I hope that you guys are getting a lot out of this. It's important, at least I think so. So hold on. We'll be back in just a few minutes after these messages.
Open Eyes is dedicated to finding the truth in all matters. We are not afraid to be politically incorrect or to ask questions. Whether it is the paranormal, government cover-ups, the dark agenda that the puppet masters have in store for us, or aliens and UFOs, nothing remains hidden. Listen to Open Eyes, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on LateNightInTheMidlands.com or OpenEyesNetwork.com. Open hearts, open minds, open eyes. The Late Night in the Midlands Radio Network is deeply devoted to you, the listener. We feel it is necessary to bring you all of the information that you can use in your life. Each and every day you will find something to listen to here, and whether you come away from the shows informed, inspired, or entertained, it is our passion. We don't bow to corporations, and we don't have handlers to tell us what not to talk about. We bring you everything. Late Night in the Midlands, however, is fully listener supported. We need your help to stay on the air and to make sure that we get the bills paid. We need your help to keep the truth alive. If you feel that you have gotten anything out of Late Night in the Midlands, we would appreciate your support. You can become a subscriber and help us out on a monthly basis, or if you'd like, a one-time donation is fully appreciated as well. Every year, the average household in America spends over $3,000 on entertainment alone. If you could help us with just a tiny fraction of that amount, you would make all of the difference. Go to LateNightInTheMidlands.com and click on the subscribe button. Thank you, and as always, keep yourself informed. TROLLS. This is a terrible new disorder being diagnosed every day. Victims of this disease have been found in psychologists, scientists, doctors, other people with letters and numbers behind their names, and anyone else who is in the world specifically to cause trouble. It stands for Totalitarian Regime Orchestrating Laughable Liar Syndrome, and is a terrible burden on anyone around those that have been diagnosed with this disease. Symptoms may include debunking all truths, diversion tactics, divisive talk, and flame war baiting, COINTELPRO tactics and maneuvers, and making rude and obnoxious comments, even where such things are not warranted. You can help cure the problem by opening your eyes to the facts, speaking about this disorder to anyone you know, and not allowing their disease to influence your life. If you or someone you know has been diagnosed with TROLS, please seek immediate assistance by going to LateNightInTheMidlands.com and listening to all of the shows that are available. Only you can prevent TROLS. This message brought to you by IRA, the Independently Reporting Association. Thank you for your support. The new priests are the purveyors of the now. The if you don't get this right now, you're doomed
mindset that is surrounding us was created by these men in black, these dark masters, these puppet masters that control the strings. They, the ones with the real knowledge of how reality works, those that know and understand the origins of us, those are the ones controlling the masses through the media, through the politics, through everything that causes us to be divided, losing the sense of what is really real. That reality is that we are all connected, all together in this thought experiment that the universe is running. We are intimately connected together, forever traveling through the universe at light speed. We're all breathing the same air. The same energies pass through us. The same emotions that you feel are the same emotions that I feel. We are all one. Stop being divided by them. Stop letting the priests of chaos and blight rule you. Stop believing the lies.
If you do not have something that gives you reason to ask for more, there is no more. That's really big. Your eternalness, our eternalness, all depends. It all hinges upon this premise of expansion.
I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent, and all will be lost. The aeroplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for universal brotherhood, for the unity of us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world, millions of despairing men, women, and little children, victims of a system that makes men torture and imprison innocent people. To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die. And the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men, with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate. Only the unloved hate. The unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery. Fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man. Not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power. The power to create machines. The power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful. To make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world. A decent world. That will give men a chance to work, that will give youth a future, and old age a security. By the promise of these things, brutes have risen to power. But they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason. A world where science and progress
will lead to all men's happiness. Soldiers, in the name of democracy, let us all unite!
I feel I'm not real is not necessarily a bad thing. Maybe what we mean by real is I really believe in my life as this or something, because that is our conditioning and habit. But maybe now there's perhaps a kind of detachment, not judging yourself by the projections of other people, because they are never going to understand what you are experiencing, no matter how much you try, and I would not even try.
During that song, you heard Charlie Chaplin during his great speech talking about machine men with machine minds. Bill Gates said not long ago that, and I'm paraphrasing here, but the day is coming and very soon when all men will bow their knees before their silicon fist and beg their binary gods for mercy. Machine men with machine minds indeed. Charlie Chaplin was very prophetic during that that movie, The Great Dictator. Awesome movie. I definitely recommend watching it. Hello again. My name is Ira, and you are listening to Open Eyes. Thank you so much for sticking around through that break. Sorry it was a little long there, but I had to take care of my cat, which we just got him last week, and he's been a good addition to the home. He's been a very positive influence in the household here, and we're really happy that he's here. Little Elliot, he's kind of become my best friend here during my broadcasts at night. So I wanted to get into the topic a little bit about money and how it is an energy form, for lack of better words, and how it is actually tied to our karma very, very intimately. So here's the idea. When you go out and you work, you are putting forward energy. You are spending energy, basically, to go to work and do whatever it is that you do. That energy then is given to you in a solidified form, you know, as currency, as the money that you then have to spend. So you are essentially turning your energy into a physical manifestation of or representation of your essence, basically, is what it comes down to. So again, the idea that I'm going with here is that money is an energy form that essentially you can then pass out to people to spend that solidified energy. So with that in mind, what I want to talk to you guys about is the way that money is essentially tying people karmically to things that you may not want to be attached to. Money does tie us to things karmically because it is our energy that's feeding whatever you're giving to. So as an example, if someone were to go out and buy drugs, then that doesn't maybe necessarily generate negative karma in and of itself, because if you feel that that is the right thing for you to do, and depending on the drug and all that kind of stuff, there may not be any kind of real negativity that's associated with it. However, if that drug dealer then went out and bought a gun and they used that gun to shoot a kid, then that karmic or that act of murder is then tied to you, because you are the one that gave the person the means and the energy in order to do the negative act, in order to do that murderous deed. So you are now tied to them karmically. Anything that you give your energy to, you have the ability to be karmically attached to anything that they do with that energy. So as another example, let's say you go out and shop at Walmart. Well, Walmart shopping, maybe not necessarily in and of itself, would seem to be a negative act, although some people would consider it to be that way. But the thing that I'm going with here is, let's say, for example, you go out and you shop at Walmart, and through that shopping, through giving them your energy in the form of money, they are then capable of going into another community and buying up property, opening up a new store, and then basically all the stores that are in that area end up getting shut down because they can no longer afford to do business, and on and on and on, and the jobs are lost and so on and so forth. All that kind of negativity gets associated with it while you are getting at least some portion of that negative karma attached to you, because you made it, you've basically given them the capability of doing whatever it is that they did. So that's just a kind of a couple of examples to show what I'm going with as far as all of this is concerned. The same things here can be said for the charities that are out there. So let's see, what was it? Last year, there was the whole ALS bucket challenge, the ice bucket challenge, where people were going out and throwing cold water on themselves in order to get people to donate to the ALS Foundation. And the ALS Foundation ended up making basically $100 million or more on this whole ice bucket challenge, far more than what they'd ever received before. And everybody basically said, oh, well, that's a good thing. That's a wonderful thing. Okay. In and of itself, it is not. In and of itself, the idea of charity, of giving, is a good thing. And I'll get to that here in a little bit. But the thing that is going on with it is that, well, essentially like 21% of the money that people gave to this charity went to the salaries and administration fees of this charitable corporation. So if somebody, for example, if one of the CEOs decides to go out and buy a hooker and ends up murdering the hooker and on and on and on, you know, then that is tied to you if you gave them that money, you know, to this charitable foundation. You gave them the capability of doing this kind of thing. So this goes directly with all of the different charities that are out there that are tied to these negative entities that are out there. So again, like the idea of the national entity and the species entity and their, you know, their karmic generation, basically. The same is said as far as these different organizations are concerned as well. Corporations, there's corporate entities, and that's actually a phrase that's out there. These corporations can become so big and so focused energy-wise that they actually are a created being that's created out of our energy going into it. So these charities are also entities as well. When people put their passions into it, it forms this created being. And anything then that is going on with it, you, as having had it, your attachment given to this thing by you giving it money, you are then going to be tied to anything that they do as well. So a lot of the charities out there are very intimately associated with all these different pharmaceutical companies that are out there. And the pharmaceutical companies, as you and I well know, are doing some very negative acts and doing very negative things. So if you give money, for example, to the American Heart Association, which then ends up feeding research money into the pharmaceutical companies to come up with new ways to, get people to stop smoking and on and on and on, you know, basically like different cancer research associations, all of this kind of stuff. Any of the projects that they do, you're going to be tied to. Any of the negative things that are associated with it, you're going to be tied to. You have to be very careful and cautious with what you do with your money, because you don't know exactly what this entity that you give to is going to do with the energy that you have given it. And anything that's negative that's associated with all of it is going to come back to you. Whether you really realize it or not, and whether you really want it to be or not, it will come back to you. So the thing that I'm advocating with all of this stuff in this episode is to tell people to be very vigilant and be very cautious with everything that you do energy-wise, because you don't want to be associated with these different negative acts that are occurring. You know, a good example, and one that I talk about, of course, frequently, is the vaccines and the vaccine manufacturers. If you give to a charity that then gives money to a pharmaceutical company that makes these vaccines, and the vaccines that they create because of that money that was given to it by these charities end up harming somebody, then that harm is not only going to be generating negative karma for the people that created the vaccine and that manufactured the vaccine, but also you for having helped fund this thing to be able to have happened. And this is something that people just don't really have an understanding about. They don't understand that when they give to things, they are also tying themselves to that thing very intimately. And whether they really want to be or not, it really does happen. There's a lot of subtle things that are going on with it all. I mean, people don't realize what they tie themselves to when they do things, and then they wonder why things in their lives take negative turns. So, like, for example, if you, again, give to this charity that then uses that money in a negative way, you might find yourself in the act of charitable giving having negativity that's coming into you because of this negative thing. So it may be that the mechanism that I spoke about earlier, the thing that I spoke about earlier, where people who are doing very positive things have negative things coming back to them, it may very well be that this is the mechanism by which that negativity comes back to them. And so, again, I'm not advocating for people to not be charitable. By far, no. Please be charitable, because that is the way to be. You want to create as much positivity as you can. But when you understand the balance with it all, maybe you can be giving to organizations or to charities that actually are going to do positive things with that money. You know, like I said, charity in and of itself is a good thing. It's a positive thing. You're looking to help somebody out in some way, and that's never a bad thing. But you have to use caution in your charity and really guard your heart against what is going to be associated with those negative things or associated with that charity that you're giving to. And of course, by charity, I mean, it's not just to charitable organizations that you can give to, but also, you know, the people on the street and that sort of thing. the people that you give to, you are also then associating yourself with. So you, I guess you might want to do your due diligence in who you're giving to, because maybe they are using it for a negative thing. And again, I hate to put it things that way, because so many people are so self-serving these days that I don't want to increase that. I just want to have people, I guess, understand that if you give to something, you're also taking a risk, and that risk, you want to find out basically if the risk kind of outweighs the rewards, I guess you could say. And that's sort of that's on your end, basically. But okay, so many people ask me my thoughts on the afterlife, reincarnation, and that sort of thing, because I talk a lot about karma and what basically can happen, or what happens to us in the afterlife because of this different karma that we accumulate during our lifetimes. And my thoughts on it is this: karma is reset. The debt is paid immediately, even if you don't realize it, you know, like you don't realize it at that moment in time, or it doesn't show up at that moment, it's still in action. So the karma itself, again, the universe does not like a void, I guess, or a vacuum, you could say. So it will do something basically to negate the negative or the positive charges, quote unquote, if you want to put it that way. But you may not realize at that moment in time what ended up happening to cause that to occur. Now, one example that I give, and it's sort of an extreme example, but one example that I give is if somebody is like adamantly dead set against gay people, and they're constantly bashing them, and they're constantly doing harm to them through their actions or their words and that sort of thing, they may not see in their own personal one-on-one life that something negative ended up occurring, but they might find out that their child later down the line grows to hate them, moves out, never speaks to them again. And that could be the karmic debt being paid, essentially. The deeds of the person causes the karma to essentially be repaid. And because time doesn't really exist, which is another subject, it's paid back immediately. So what does all this have to do with the afterlife and reincarnation and all of that stuff? Well, it's because in each of the lives that we live, which this is not the first one and it's not going to be the last, in each of the lives that we live, there's no debt or ties karma-wise to the previous life. It's a new life and it's a new existence. And therefore, anything that would be tied to a previous one would sort of negate the point of this being an entirely new experience, basically. So in my knowledge and in my learning and my experience of things, what I've seen happening is essentially the every time that a new life is ensued, there's a fresh karma slate that's associated with this new shard of a soul. And again, remember what I said earlier about the different types of souls that we are. We're not just this one, but we're also that oversoul. This is just one little piece or a shard or a flake of glass or snowflake or whatever you want to put it, you know, whatever way is easiest for you to understand. this is just a new aspect of it. And it's the oversoul, I guess you could say, that is actually controlling everything. So this is just a new experience. This is a new way to experience things. Now, some people might ask why it's that way, and what about the people who do things wrong? Like, what about the people who are serial killers? Do they ever go to hell, and why don't they get punished, and on and on and on? Well, they actually do get punished for things that they've done wrong in their lives, just as we all do. What ends up happening when we die, again, this is my experience. This is the things that I've learned from talking to the spirits that I've talked to. This is the things that I've learned from my own personal experiences with things. What ends up occurring is that when we die, we have a life review of sorts, but it's not what you think. It's not what people normally consider as a life review, like how people will look at different aspects of their lives and see, okay, well, I did wrong here and I did wrong here. What could I have done different here? No, what I've seen occurring is that the people, when you die, basically, anybody that you have wronged in your life, anybody that you have caused harm to in your life, either through your actions or your inactions, and that's an important aspect of it, either through your actions or inactions, you live the hurts that this other person lived. So if, for example, you were born into a household where you were very abused, and the people who abused you did not ever seem to pay the price for it, they do in the afterlife. What ends up occurring is that they will actually live life through you. They will actually become you, and they will live every moment of the hurt that they caused you, not just the physical harm, but also the mental and emotional harm that came to you. And tied to that, anybody that you then harm because of that stuff occurring, they will live as well, and so will you. So it's actually it's kind of a horrific thought when you think about it. It's sort of frightening that if for example, through me hurting somebody else, I'm then going to live not only that person's hurt, but anybody that they hurt then because I hurt them. That's kind of a scary thought, but that is sort of quote unquote hell. And all of this is done before we're reborn again, before we're reincarnated again. And at that point in time, then everything is reset. Now, this is not all of that the afterlife is. Everything that I just talked about here actually happens, at least to our perspective of things, in an instant of time. So you could live multiple lifetimes within a fraction of an instant of time, because time does not exist there. And so you can go through all of this basically in between times, but after it's all said and done, you're taken to a place, you're brought into a place that is very, for lack of better words, very warm and embracing and very loving. And there really is no judgment, because you've already judged yourself. You've already judged yourself in the life review that you did. So there really is no judgment. It's just love. It's just a warm place where you can kind of kick back and relax. And now this again is my understanding of things from speaking to different spirits, from having communications with the other side. This is the things that I've been told basically that happen. So again, we punish ourselves for the things that we do by actually living through the hurts that we cause. We basically have reset our karma because we have paid the karmic price for all of our actions and our inactions. And then basically we are born again. We are born into this new lifetime after having made the sacrifices, after having made the payment, basically. We're born with this new lifetime. Now, we're born with amnesia because if we remembered what things are like on the other side, we actually would do whatever we could do to get back there because it's a really nice place to be. It's not bad at all, right? So if we remembered everything, then we would basically just kind of eliminate ourselves from the human race at that point in time and never want to come back. And there really would then be no point of living. And we live lives for the experience. We're here for the experience and for learning lessons through those experiences. So when I say, for example, that life is all about the lessons that we learn, that is the case. But we're experiencing everything, and through those experiences, that's how we learn the different lessons that we're here to learn. And we decide ahead of time what those lessons are going to be and the different things that we're probably going to encounter in our lives to teach us those lessons. So let's think about ways to get away from having our karma tied to other people and other events that you really don't want to be connected with. To me, I guess the first most obvious way is to be conscious of what you're doing and who you're giving things to. Again, like I stated earlier, you want to be charitable. You want to be in that aspect of love and helping somebody out. But you have to understand that you're also taking a risk when you do this love event. And that really is the case kind of with love all around, though, isn't it? That love itself is sort of a risk, that every time that you step forward into an aspect of love, you are taking a risk because so many people out there are out to hurt everybody and they're out to take advantage of those that are, willing to give of themselves in a loving way. I spoke earlier about being more self-serving or that type of thing, and that's sort of how I look at things. If you are kind of more self-serving, you're going to generate more negative karma. And if you're more other-serving, you know, kind of service to others, then you are generating positive karma. And just remember that as far as everything is concerned, there is a balance that's maintained. So even if you do, I guess, give charitably to something, then you, yes, are taking a risk. But all of the things that occur, I guess you could say you're already kind of paying the price for. Everything, again, kind of happens in an instant, whether you really realize it or not. Again, time does not really exist. It's just we're perceiving things, I guess you could say. So in the end, I guess what I would advocate for people is that give of yourself and give of yourself as freely as you can, with the caveat of knowing and understanding that if you do, the risk to yourself karmically is one that you have to take into consideration. And to be honest with you, for me, I would rather take the risk and give of myself freely, because I guess you could look at even that as being an act of positivity, knowing that the risk is there, knowing that you're going to, you know, maybe risk having this kind of stuff occur. you can essentially kind of look at it as, okay, well, I'm giving of myself and I may end up having something happen to me, but that's just the sacrifice that I'm willing to make. And that is an even more positive karmic generation, I guess you could say. So I hope that all of this stuff was understandable to you guys. The one thing that I really have never really heard people talk about before is the idea of the national karma and how we're tied to it, and how the corporate entity is there as well. So with those things in mind, do what you can to counteract the negativity that has spawned through all of the people basically creating this type of entity, this type of being. You can either protest against it. You know, I don't advocate really protesting per se. I mean, protesting doesn't really do much good when it comes down to it. All it really is expending energy without really anything coming out of it. You know, take that same amount of energy and create something new that is actually of benefit, that maybe fights against what it is that you're protesting against. One example that I give is nuclear power plants. People go out and they'll protest against nuclear power plants. And that's maybe not necessarily a bad thing, but if those same amount of people that are out there that protest against these power plants actually get themselves together and use their resources and use their energy and their intelligences to create a new type of energy production, then that would be better than protesting. So in the end, I guess you could say protesting doesn't do any good. So that's why I'm kind of hesitant towards saying you could maybe protest against the things that the nation are doing, just because I don't think that it really does any good. A great example, again, look at the whole Ferguson and New York and all those protests that are going on with all of that. You don't see anything positive coming out of that at all. Nothing positive has come from any of those protests in any way. In fact, just over the weekend, we had it was announced that two police officers were shot in Ferguson. One of them was killed. I don't know if the other one died, but I know they were in serious condition at one point in time. But, you know, there's so much negativity that's associated with that. And all of those protesters, again, that are down there, even the ones who are there for a positive reason, they're down there and they're associating themselves with this negative karma that's being generated through this set of events that's going on. And they're going to have to pay the price for this stuff happening. They're going to have to pay the price, you know, karmically for the things that they're being associated with. And that really is not a good thing. It's really not. There's a lot of negativity that's going on with it. And the same idea applies to everything else that's out there that you can possibly tie yourself to. Now, hopefully after all of this, you guys don't decide that the best thing to do is to just kind of hide in your house and hope that nothing ever happens to you, because that's not really the way to do things either. But, you know, in the end, I guess the best way that I can put things is, if you're living life in the way that you know that you should, and in the way that you are doing things in an aspect of love, there's nothing wrong with that. Love really is the best way to do everything that you do. If you can do it from that understanding or that mindset, you're really not gonna go wrong. At least if it's the true love, which I've talked about before, and you can go back into my archives and listen to all of my stuff as far as that's concerned. So with all of this being said, karma-wise, do what you can to, I guess, generate as much positivity as you can, because we do have enough negative in the world already. Don't do things that are going to be negative. You know, don't be negative. Don't be evil. And I know I'm being obvious with all of this stuff, but sometimes it's good to be reminded that what we do has such a major impact on everybody else that it's very important to have a deep understanding that what you do affects all of the other people that are out there. Even if you think that you're just one little drop, that one little drop in the ocean can cause major problems down the line. So with all of that being said, guys, I am pretty much out of time. Now, I hope that you guys enjoyed this episode. I hope that you guys got a lot out of it. I hope that you see where I was coming from with all of it and got something positive from it. And again, I don't advocate kind of just hiding in your house and never coming out and never giving to people and all of that kind of stuff. That's not the right way to be, and that's not the right way to take all of this. Just be careful, be cautious, be vigilant, and guard your heart, because there are people that are out there that are looking to take advantage of it. So guys, with that, if you want to go to the show notes for this show, you can go to openeyesnetwork.com/OE083. If you want to reach me on Facebook and Twitter, you can go to Open Eyes Network or Ira Robinson at both of those. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to feedback@openeyesnetwork.com. I reach out to everybody. I hope that you guys do send me emails, because I love hearing from you guys and I love talking and interacting with you guys out there. I've gotten a lot of really good feedback about the shows that I've done so far, and I hope that you guys are enjoying listening to them as much as I'm enjoying speaking them. And of course, the phone starts to ring right at the end. Be sure to tune in on Wednesday. I will be starting my show at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, latenightinthemidlands.com. Be sure to stick around. Michael Vera will be bringing you Late Night in the Midlands in just a few minutes. And until next time, guys, keep safe out there and have fun. And thank you so much for listening.